Welcome to the Materials Universe podcast, where we will explore the materials world and how it shapes our lives. My name is Bailey Tibbett, and I will be your host this season. Please join me as I interview researchers from the Center for Dynamics and Control of Materials at the University of Texas at Austin. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Materials Universe podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Tibbett, and today I'm here with our lovely cohort.
Hi, this is Audrey Colgrove, your co-host and producer here at the Materials Universe.
Yes, and today's guest is Dr. Ryan Pehunin from Northern Arizona University. He's an associate professor in applied physics and materials science. So, Dr. Pehunin, can you tell us a little bit about your research?
Yeah, so at the moment, my research almost entirely involves the interaction of light and sound. I'm abusing the term sound there a little bit. I'm not necessarily talking about sound waves you hear with your ears, but vibrations and materials. And these interactions can be used for everything from creating, high-performance lasers to some of the research that we're working on now, which is to try and utilize phonons or sound waves for quantum information science purposes.
I like that you specify that sound is kind of in quotes. In your work, because what else do you call things that are vibrating like that?
I suppose that's such a good question. I just, every now and then you meet people that are a little disappointed that you're abusing terminology. And so I think the technical term would be a phonon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is just a vibration of a material. Yeah.
So what initially drew you to this topic?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Really, it came about during one of my postdocs. So I did a postdoc with just an absolutely wonderful person, Peter Rakich. And his research was focused on the interaction of light and traveling sound waves. And that was kind of my introduction to the field. And he taught me everything I know about it.
I was going to say, before we jump too far into the science, can you explain a little bit what quantum information science is actually, like what it actually entails?
Great question. So quantum information science. So the way that I like to describe this is just by talking about a practical use of quantum information science. So quantum information science, why is it interesting? So what it enables is powerful forms of computing and precision sensors and simulations. It enables you to simulate systems that might be intractable to simulate with even supercomputers. So just to give you an idea, you could look at the classic problem of trying to factor a number. Okay? Imagine trying to factor a number. Now, imagine that, so just quick example, maybe the number is 6. You can factor that. We can all do that in our head. The factors are 2 and 3. Now imagine that those two numbers are two prime numbers, and they're very, very, very large. That ends up being a very, very challenging problem to solve on a computer. But it turns out it's the type of problem that a quantum computer can solve trivially, or in other words, an application of quantum information science would be a quantum computer.
Interesting. So I work with some undergraduate researchers, and part of one of the exercises we do is we ask them to try and explain their work to children, just as an activity. And I think you did a fairly good example of that without meaning to, because I did ask one of my students if he could explain his quantum computing research to me, and the look on his face when I asked him that he was quite distressed, but it was a good conversation nonetheless.
Yeah, definitely a good explanation. I can only factor things up to about 10. 6 was a great choice. So I guess you said that you study the intersection between light and phonons, specifically for quantum information science. So what kind of niche are you trying to fill here?
Very good question. So one of the biggest challenges in practical quantum information science, one of the challenges, is that the very features, the quantumness that can empower remarkable technology is fragile. And it decays very, very rapidly. And this is a process called decoherence. And so one of the goals is to utilize phonons as a way of storing quantum information. And there's some really compelling recent evidence that phonons can be an amazing way of storing quantum information. It could, you know, have superb decoherence times. Yeah.
Can you expand on coherence and decoherence a little more?
For a podcast definition, I think the thing that I would say is that systems that have coherence exhibit quantumness.
Mm.
That's a really bad definition. you could be technical and be like, it's the off diagonal elements of the density matrix, but maybe we cut all this. states with quantum features often exhibit coherence.
Interesting. Okay. So it's very specific to quantum states.
We mean something specific when we're talking about quantum states, but we often use the term coherent in other ways as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'd wanted to ask, how do you see like the interplay between the fundamental physics you do and the more practical applications of the work? Because I know you're very much based in theory.
Yeah, it's such a good question. And the questions like that are always in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
I really enjoy work that tries to reveal some of nature's secrets. Mm-hmm. I really do. But in the back of my mind, I hope that some of the things that I do could contribute in some way to being, you know, to providing some kind of practical technology or solution to a problem. So I always have that in the back of my mind. And I feel like you can see that a little bit in my work. Because I am now working quite a lot on phonon-phonon interactions for quantum information science, but also I've spent a lot of time working on things like laser physics, and, you know, which have very practical applications.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your laser physics then.
Okay.
Would you mind explaining, just giving a brief explanation about Rayon physics?
Sure. So Rayon scattering in plain language is the interaction of light and sound waves. And you can understand this with four basic ingredients. So there's an effect called photoelasticity. And imagine taking a material and compressing it. You can actually, but through that compression, you can modify its refractive index. Mm-hmm. So that's one ingredient. The flip side of photoelasticity is that imagine now you have a transparent material and you shine light into it. The presence of that optical energy can then deform the material. So they're kind of two sides of the same coin. So it's important to know, now to understand how light could interact with sound, it's important to know that sound is a traveling strain wave. So it's this periodic wave of strain and it moves. And so what that means is because there's photoelasticity, that means that a phonon actually is modulating the optical properties of the material periodically, and it's moving. So this can lead to the formation of what's called a Bragg grating that's moving. And so Bragg gratings reflect light, and because it's moving, you get a redshift. So that, in a nutshell, is kind of the physics that underlies Rayon scattering.
I see. So it's kind of like... the sound is kind of just like a perturbation, essentially, to the light system.
That's right. Okay. So it's a perturbation that, you know, the presence of that sound wave leads to a perturbation of the optical properties.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That's right.
So you're essentially amplifying these lasers to be stronger or?
Yeah, very, very good question. Why would you want to make one of these lasers? The reason why Brillouin lasers are so useful is, so first off, it's a laser that is actually powered by the light from another laser. So that sounds absurd, but really what you're able to do is you can actually change the quality of the light that's coming out. So you can use a laser to create your Brillouin or energize your Brillouin laser, but the light coming out of the Brillouin laser can be much more coherent. I'm using that word again. And what I mean here is that it's fairly more monochromatic. The light coming out is more purely a single frequency.
Like more distilled, kind of?
More distilled, yeah. So the light from all lasers, we're told it's one color in our undergraduate physics classes, but it's a band of colors.
I'm once again limited by my sight.
Yeah, so it's a band of colors, and we call that the line width of the laser. And the narrower the line width, the more that light coming from that laser is a single color. So you get a line width narrowing.
So from a practical standpoint, you can essentially take a worse laser,
yes,
and like upgrade it.
Yes.
I assume for maybe cheaper than it would be to just build a really good laser? Or is there a different application for this?
Yeah, no. I think you nailed it.
Okay.
Yeah. You could start with a cheap laser with modest performance, and the light coming out would be more useful for certain types of applications. Yeah.
Yeah, and like biomicroscopy, you do that too, in a way, where it's not a laser that you're amplifying, but basically you can get up to your max zoom, but then people will put oil on the slide because it has a higher refractive index, so you'll be able to actually see better, even though you didn't change the instrument at all.
That's interesting.
Wow, so just making our tools better.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I feel like optical properties always have this like really weird stackability to them.
I don't refraction know and action.
I just remember that unit of physics and being like, oh, I can't do this.
I think refraction and action was a science fair poster title when I was younger.
That's pretty incredible.
So I guess we are a materials podcast technically. So are there any refractive materials that you like to particularly think about shining lasers on?
A lot of the materials that we're working with at the moment are crystals. So crystals, for example, diamonds, sapphires. I mean, it all sounds fake, but diamonds, sapphires, rubies. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the focus,
yeah,
in the group at the moment. They are gems, but they have really incredible mechanical properties. Yeah.
The difference between diamonds, sapphires, and rubies is down to is structural, is it not?
Yeah, structural and the elemental composition.
Yes.
So rubies and sapphire are pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. One just has a little sprinkle of chromium.
Yeah.
Ruby has a little bit of chromium in it. Yeah.
Cool. That's why they're so rare. To kind of bring it back, were you first introduced into Brillouin physics when you were in that postdoc?
Or that's right.
Okay.
I think that was the first time I'd ever heard of Brillouin physics was when I took that postdoc.
Was there anything particular about it that really caught your eye?
So I had interacted a little bit with who would become my postdoc advisor, Peter Rakich. I feel like we had chemistry, and he's just a really brilliant guy, and I wanted to work with him. That was a big part of it. And, you know, not to get into the weeds too much here, but some of the work that I had been doing as a graduate student and a postdoc involved mechanical motion coupling to light. And so, in a way, it was a natural progression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to take too much of a tangent, but that's something that I've been thinking about with more of the conversations we have on the podcast, is sometimes how important a person can be when it comes to the importance of a topic.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I'm quite interested in brain physics right now because you've been really open and very communicative, and you're a great communicator about it. Would you mind talking more about maybe some of the people in your career?
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for that question. One of the things I really enjoy about, not that I'm a well of knowledge or anything, but I interact with younger people and sometimes they like advice. And I love telling them that one of the guiding principles that I've used in the later part of my career is that I pick people. And as you know, I find that whatever I invest the time in to understand, I'm going to enjoy it and love it. It's going to become the best thing for me. And if I can do that, working with someone that I really, really enjoy working with, it just is so much more rewarding. So people that I just have to mention, Dan Blumenthal at UCSB, he's done so much for me in my career. And he's just a wonderful human and a fantastic scientist. And, you know, a lot of the work that I did on Bruin laser physics was in collaboration with his group. And then there's Peter Rakich, just great people. And recently I've been interacting, collaborating with Matt Eichenfield, and he's also been a really wonderful person to collaborate with. Yeah. So I kind of like picking people, or at least that's on the list, you know, if I'm assessing, you know, whether or not I want to work on a project, that's a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's also kind of how I picked my PI or my lab, because I've done a lot of research in a bunch of different areas. So I'm very much kind of similar, and it's like, I'm going to love any problem I work on for the most part. As long as there's something that hooks me, it'll be fine, which I'm pretty easy. So it's fine. So yeah, I definitely like chose it more based on like the people that I work with or like the people I see daily. So I totally get that. I think something that we do like to talk about as well on this podcast when it comes to mentorship is like, how have you like implemented maybe tips and tricks from your mentors that you're now passing on to your own mentees?
Oh gosh, that's another great question. I'm striving to be like both Peter Rakich and Dan Blumenthal. Striving. So Peter is infinitely patient, infinitely kind. And the way that I try and convey that with my students is I really do try and help them to be kind to themselves if they're finding themselves struggling. And try to be available. That's another thing. It's like, Peter could be so busy. And if you called him up and said, oh, I was just thinking about this thing, he'd say, come up, come to my office. So just being available. And then I do verbalize these things. I do verbalize. I'm like, you got to be kind to yourself. That I don't think that Peter necessarily ever directly said those words to me, but the message came through. So that was one aspect. And then with Dan, Dan is a really, not only a great scientist and engineer and thinker, but he runs a group very, very well. And I'm trying to pick up some of those, adapt some of those by being clear about expectations and things like that. I'm still learning, still struggling to be better at you know, running a group. But those are two people I really look up to.
That's really cool. I think, unfortunately, it is quite rare to find a PI who's also very good at management. I feel like it's mostly based on science, so sometimes management, then PIs can pick it up. But I think that's really cool you're making like an effort to kind of be a better manager. And I think you're doing great on the patient's end. I mean, if our listeners could hear how many times we asked you how to pronounce Bruin physics, they would know.
Well, and that's a topic that we've discussed a bit here on the podcast is the different hats that professors, PIs have to wear. Yeah. It's not just research. It's also kind of HR.
Yeah.
Also managerial.
Yeah.
How do you have any insight into how you balance that currently?
Oh gosh, I wouldn't say I'm particularly good at the people part of it.
Mm-hmm.
when I'm at my best version of myself, I'm patient, kind, and clear about my expectations. Unfortunately, I'm not always like that, but I'm still learning. So,
well, and it's interesting that that's such a big part of being an academic, when often people don't really associate those skills with researchers.
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot of researchers could definitely use some self-awareness. Just in general, nothing in particular. But like, you know, being aware of your own flaws so that you're able to work on them. That's why we understand systems in the same way.
Sorry, Annie, I'm sorry.
That was incredible.
Call out all of academia, Bailey.
it's like, mm-hmm. We should approach people problems similar to how we approach science ones.
Yeah.
People are actually very predictable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that what game theory is all about?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Kind of, yeah. That's an oversimplification. To kind of go back to some of the simple things, would you mind sharing, if you have a story for it, what maybe got you first interested in science?
Oh, gosh. I think I kind of have one of those classic...
Yeah.
Legos?
Not Legos, but airplanes.
Mm.
Yeah, my dad was a pilot, and I just was obsessed with airplanes. And, you know, I was like this little kid, and everyone's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I learned that aeronautical engineer is the person that works on airplanes.
Physics of airplanes are really fun.
Yeah. So I'm not an aeronautical engineer, but I didn't know about physics at the time. So I feel like I'm in the right place.
Yeah. We're here to spread the good word about physics.
Whatever gets you in the door is good, I think.
When
I was younger, I read some like biography or something of like Marie Curie. So I really wanted to be like a nuclear physicist. And I was like, I'm going to work at CERN. I'm going to do all this stuff. I took French in middle school. I was like, I'm going to get this done. And then I'm not working in nuclear physics at all.
Yeah.
But it definitely like opened my eyes to kind of like being a part of science, which I think is really just the key when like you're younger, like just kind of stimulating children to just be like interested. Like it doesn't have to be anything specific. You'll probably change your mind. I know 21-year-olds that change their minds. So.
Yes.
Well, and that goes back to how important the people are in the science.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not just about what you're doing. It's about who you're doing it with, who's inspiring you.
Yeah.
And passing all of that along.
Yeah. So as part of the season's like series, we always ask the same question to everyone. So it's a materials related question. We kind of asked it a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So maybe you can come up with another gem. But basically the question is, so we ask everyone this question and we're just curious to hear what you think the next material will be, like the next level of materials. It can be really far reaching, does not have to be practical, but just like whatever newish material you're most excited about.
New? Does it have to be newish?
Well, it doesn't have to be newish. It could be like new applications of an old material or something. Yeah,
I mean, one of the things that is very exciting to me is the work that Peter Rakich's group has done with quartz.
Ooh.
Which is old material.
Yeah.
So well understood. But, you know, they can get into the quantum ground state for the sound waves that they can access with telecom wavelengths. The phonons, you know, that they can access are, you know, live for milliseconds. They have superb quantum coherence times. Quartz is exciting, and they can do some really amazing fabrication using quartz. They developed all these techniques to create micro-resonators with very, very smooth surfaces. So I don't know. I'd probably go with quartz just off the top of my head.
Well, that's perfect. Oldie but a goodie.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I remember like quartz watches growing up.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's fascinating to see that that's still being...
Yeah.
Investigate and develop that kind of the science around quartz.
And nowadays, when I hear quartz, it's because of some sort of video game.
I thought you were going to say crystal power.
I was going to say your own crystal power as well.
No, it's more like some video game where it's like you're mining something and it's always like one of the levels.
Oh, yeah.
No, I was so ready to talk about crystal power.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, recharge your chakras.
Yeah.
Like the rocks.
The rocks.
Yeah. Smoky quartz, rose quartz.
Oh, yeah, but they get like more specific.
Yeah.
Like, it's like rose quartz. Or quartz.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us for the podcast, Dr. Vahunen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us. We're so excited to have the MIRA program be partnered with our MRSEC. So this is a great opportunity for us to reach out to more people. We love it.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, ladies.
That's all for today's episode of the Materials Universe podcast. Thank you for listening to our interesting conversations with inspiring guests from different fields of science and engineering. We hope you enjoyed learning something new. Please leave us a review and share this podcast with friends. You can follow us on social media at TexasCDCM on Instagram and X. Thank you to the National Science Foundation and the University of Texas at Austin. And an additional thank you to the Late's audio studio crew for their help with the production of this podcast.